I'm Paul Weegraf, director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. Joining me remotely today are two musicians from the Delaware community, pianist and composer Jennifer Nicole Campbell, and violinist and Milford Branch director of the Music School of Delaware, Amos Fayette. Welcome, Jennifer and Amos.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
So great to have you joining us today. We're looking at a concert, an upcoming thank you concert, Bringing Music to Life, that's going to be sponsored by the Music School of Delaware at the Wilmington Concert Hall on Wednesday, November 18th at 7 p.m. A live performance, but also, I believe, live streamed. Is that correct, Amos?
That is correct.
Let's talk a little bit first about the program. It looks like you have four pieces that I'm looking at here. Amos, talk a little bit about the four, at least the first three, and then Jennifer will let you talk about your original world premiere composition. Amos, the first three pieces, the Warlock, Britain, and Beethoven. What did you choose those, and what was your thinking behind bringing those together? All great pieces.
They're all wonderful pieces. Actually, this is my first time through the Peter Warlock Capriole Suite. I'm really looking forward to playing that. The Britain is a piece that I played that for the first time many years ago. I think I was about 12 was my first year at Juilliard Pre-College. So that's bringing back some really fond memories. I really love that piece of music. It's very exciting. It's a lot of fun to play. And the Beethoven is a really special piece as well. Given that this is a string orchestra transcription of the scherzo from the Sixth Symphony, the Pastoral Symphony. So I'm looking forward to playing that as well. I think the audience is really, really going to enjoy it. It should be an exciting performance.
The Britain, the Simple Symphony, how many are in your ensemble? Was that Simple Symphony written for a smaller ensemble?
It's written for a string orchestra, which is just by nature of the fact that there's no winds, brass, or percussion, will be a smaller ensemble. The string ensemble we'll have on the stage will be 17 people in total.
And what kind of rehearsal process have you gone through to put this together?
Well, our rehearsals are actually starting to coming up next week on the 13th. I'm actually going to be getting together with our president, Kate Ransom, as well as our viola principal, Maria Russo, and having a chat about different things, maybe going over some directional things, some bowings, dynamics, maybe some overall musical ideas, so that when we have everyone together, the rehearsal will just go that much more smoothly.
And I see from your promotion that you are referring to the ensemble as Faculty and Friends String Orchestra. Is this music school faculty and some additional musicians you're bringing in, or are they students, or who's reflected in that ensemble?
For the most part, the ensemble is made up of Music School of Delaware faculty, past and present. And there are some other musicians, like, for example, Jacques-Pierre Milan is a friend of the music school and plays with the Associated Seraphim Ensemble quite a bit. And he's been a good friend of mine for the last few years. So looking forward to actually playing with him. He's a great cellist.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the challenges of being a concert master, where you're both playing, but also having to hold together the ensemble.
Well, being a concert master, that's an interesting sort of predicament all by itself. Traditionally, the concert master is equal parts performance and politics. So, in a traditional symphony orchestra, the concert master is sort of a facilitator, if you will, the conduit through which the conductor will sort of deliver their musical vision to the musicians. The concert master also traditionally in a professional symphony orchestra oversees certain things such as the substitute list, will have an active voice in auditions, and is one of the people who is most responsible for sort of curating the ensemble from the inside out. Now in this role, given that there is no conductor on the stage for this performance, the concertmaster takes on a role not at all dissimilar from that of the first violinist of a string quartet, just sort of more, just extrapolated a bit. you know, there's less of a conduit sort of role and more of a unifying sort of role, kind of getting everybody on the same page and making sure everyone can bring their very best to the equation.
So you have to give a little bigger head down beat or whatever to keep everybody together.
That's part of it, of course.
Now talk a little bit about, for our listeners' sake, talk a little bit about your background as a violinist.
Okay, so I come from a musical family. I started playing the violin when I was 2.5 years old. My mother is a, I know Jen Campbell's looking like, oh my God, 2.5 years.
Wow.
So my mother is now a retired Suzuki violin teacher. She started me, she was my first teacher. My father taught public school orchestra for 30 years. They're both now happily retired. I have three younger sisters who are also violinists. Well, two of them are, one's a cellist. And I grew up on Long Island. For many years, I followed the orchestral performance track. I was a fellow at the New World Symphony for 3 years, which is actually also the kind of the place where I fell in love with education and administration, which started me on a path that led me to where I am now as Milford Branch Director of the Music School of Delaware, where I've been since summer of 2017.
So if your mother was a Suzuki violin teacher, is that how you started, through the Suzuki method?
Yes, we followed the Suzuki method pretty to the letter until I was about 8 or 9 or so, at which point I started making the transition to a more traditional sort of instruction. I kind of grew out of it, if you will, like a lot of people do. I mean, you kind of get what you need to from it, and then you move on to the next thing.
So the three pieces, before we get to Jennifer's piece, what for you is the highlight of each of the pieces, the Warlock, Capriole Suite, written Simple Symphony, and Beethoven Scherzo? I mean, what do you find intriguing about each of those pieces?
Well, the Capriole Suite, it's just that it's new to me. I spent a lot of years kind of traveling around playing with the different orchestras, and so the amount of repertoire that I encounter now that I've played is way bigger than the amount of repertoire that I haven't played. So getting to experience a new piece for the first time, that's really exciting to me. Mm-hmm. The Beethoven, I've played that symphony several times in its entirety and in its original format. So getting to play this new string orchestra transcription, I've never done it before. And so that's going to be a new experience, and I'm really looking forward to that. However, if it's just coming down to which piece do I like the best, that for me, hands down, is the Britten Simple Symphony. I love Benjamin Britten's music, you know, especially his 4C interludes from Peter Grimes, his violin concerto. I think he's a fabulous composer, a very underrated composer. And the Simple Symphony being something that, you know, he says simple symphony, I don't see it as very simple, but it's something that maybe is more accessible than some of his other music, which can be at times rather prickly. I think it's a really wonderful piece of music that sometimes gets, because it's a little easier to get around, it sometimes can be relegated to maybe a youth orchestra playing it. It's really exciting when it's played really well. It's a great piece of music to hear.
Talk a little bit about the logistics of the concert itself being both live and live stream. What does that mean for audiences, and how do they find out more information about it?
Well, first of all, to find more information, you can always go to our website at www.musicschoolofdelaware.org. Remember when going to the website that Delaware is spelled out. We do occasionally get someone calling us and saying, I couldn't get to your website because they use the abbreviation. Just saying. But you can, another way you can get in touch with us, you can certainly call either one of our branches, but for this particular performance, make sure you call the Wilmington branch at 302-762-1132. Now, to answer your question about what the audience experience is, it if you're there live, it really won't be any different from any other live performance you've been to, with the added element of social distancing, of course, which we want to be responsible. We wouldn't want anyone to get sick during this pandemic. As far as the stage logistics are concerned, that's where things get a little interesting. Ordinarily, a string orchestra of this size will be pretty tightly packed together on the stage, with social distancing in effect on stage as well. That, of course, is going to present a little bit of a different element. I always, when I'm trying to play just anywhere in an orchestra, and as you know, parts are sort of dispersed throughout the different musicians of the orchestra, when I'm playing with someone who is perhaps a bit further away from me, I find my level of anticipation has to go up, anticipating what they're going to do. You know, my knowledge of the score has to be a bit more fine-tuned, because you don't have the luxury of having that person necessarily right next to you. Your reaction time, no matter how quick you are, you know, it has to be a little bit more on point.
Right.
I think just really the level of preparation is all it needs to be, just a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
But from that, it shouldn't be too much different.
And by going to the website, people can also find out how to listen in through the live streaming.
Absolutely.
Which is great. I mean, it allows the concert to have an unlimited geographic reach. I think that's great that you're applying that technology. Jennifer, I want to thank you for waiting. I want to turn to you now, but let me first remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Joining me today, we've been chatting with Amos Fayette, the Milford Branch Director of the Music School of Delaware, who's also the concertmaster of the upcoming concert, Bringing Music to Life. Jennifer Nicole Campbell is with us now, and I want to turn to you, Jennifer. Jennifer will be performing an original composition. Jennifer is both a composer and pianist. And Jennifer, we are talking offline. What I see in the promotion for the concert is you will be playing new work for solo piano, which I envision myself walking through the art gallery and looking at something that's called Untitled. talk a little bit about your composition, what went into it, what it's the nature of it is, and you know, the sort of the style and what your influences were in the composition.
Yeah, it's naming a piece of music is always I think one of the most difficult things for me. So this particular piece though is quite different because what we did to kind of fundraise for this particular event here was I was given kind of parameters from people that donated money to the school. And for a certain amount, they could say, well, you get to choose, you know, the key of a certain portion of the piece. Let's say 8 measures should be in D minor. Or I want you to play the pentatonic scale. I would say that one of the most interesting was someone said, I want to hear a chord from a Jimi Hendrix piece. And I was like, oh, okay, that was certainly the most interesting of all the parameters. So a lot of people just said, you know, let the composer decide. But what I'm having to do is really, you know, kind of put together almost like a patchwork with these different parameters. And in honor of Beethoven, I thought, well, this is perfect timing to do some kind of fantasy on Ode to Joy. It might end up being called that, but I'm still working on it. And in full transparency, I'm still working on the piece. And you might think, oh my God, it's November 18th. But it's exciting, you know, and it's a piece of music that I really want focused on joyfulness. And I want people to be uplifted when they hear it. And the way that I have the piece set up, it's got different sections of it. And it goes through, the tune of Ode to Joy is kind of going through a journey. There's a portion of the piece that starts, you know, kind of dark and dreary, and it's Ode to Joy in a minor key, which is kind of interesting. So it's meant to take the listener on a journey and hopefully uplift them.
I'm curious about your process in composing. Do you sit at a keyboard and sort of play through things until you come up with something you want to put down on paper? Or, I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, it changes with each piece that I compose, I have to say. usually what I start out doing is I'll put the recorder on and improvise some ideas. And then I, you know, later on, probably the day later, I'll listen through and I'll think, well, that was interesting, but no way. And other things, oh, I could take that. And so then you kind of set, you know, kind of a groundwork. And then I try to decide on what kind of form I want the piece to have. But I think it's important. I mean, composing is so different than improvisation, because improvisation is more reactionary, right? And you just kind of follow, you know, these different feelings you have. Whereas composition, you're it's like a, you know, an invisible building you're having to create in sound, and it's a very different process. But I would say, to answer your question a bit more clearly, is I try to record some improvisatory things, and then I, you know, get out the tools and start to build, you know, a musical house, I guess.
Do you use technology to actually write out the music, or are you still sitting there with the staff paper and the pencil?
I typically have my computer resting right on my piano, and I do some work at the piano, some work away from the piano. It's interesting, Paul, because I think sometimes I limit myself when I'm at the piano, because I'll start playing, right, and then I'm not doing as much deep thinking about, wait a minute, you know, this is, oh, I like this sound. It's like, just because you like the sound doesn't mean it will work for the piece of music, which is kind of interesting. So I'm trying to kind of split my time evenly between the piano and, you know, sitting outside or enjoying the weather or something.
I was wondering, there is technology, correct me if I'm wrong, there is technology whereby if you play something on a keyboard, it records it on as written music. Am I right about that?
Yeah, there are different kind of modes. I use Finale, and it's called Hyperscribe. So, you know, you go to the keyboard and you use the MIDI. The funny thing about that, though, is that, you know, we're not computers. So if you have even like 0.0001 second, it's like, oh, it's a 128th note, and, you know, 228th rest, and you're like, oh, fun, you know.
It's looking like a PDQ box.
Exactly. You got it, Paul. Yeah, exactly.
So this particular piece was commissioned for this concert?
Yes, for the music school, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's really exciting. How long of a piece is it?
It's going to be probably 5 to 7 minutes, something like that.
Okay. And yeah, it is a solo piece for piano. It's just, mm-hmm, you on the stage.
Yeah.
Now, are you the finale to the program then? Are you the last piece on the program?
I believe that's how it's listed. I'm not sure if that's going to be the program order, to be honest. I don't know. Amos, do you know?
Amos, do you have a sequence for the pieces?
Yes, I do. I just give me 1 minute. I will pull it up. And
looking it up?
It's going to be, yep, I have it right here. Beethoven, Warlock, World Premiere, Intermission, and then Britain.
Great. So Jennifer, where does this piece fit in your lexicon of composition? And how many pieces have you done? Do you have other pieces that are similar to this?
I would say it has some similarity to other piano works that I have, in the sense that with my music, I'd like to take the listener on a journey. I want them to feel like they've gone through something. It's not just all, you know, like happy, or it's not just all sad. I'd like to create an adventure for the listener. And so in that sense, I would say it's similar to some of my other compositions. This one, I'd say there's sort of a little bit of a dark side to it, sort of a dark night of the soul, if you will. I mean, taking Ode to Joy and making it minor is a little, you know, on the dark side, if you will. But because of that, it makes it even more the joyful in the end, because it's been through this journey. So I think people will like it. And, you know, I looked at the lyrics for Ode to Joy, and Beethoven's really honestly one of my heroes. I think, you know, he was deaf, and he wrote a piece of music that everybody knows. You know, it's one of the first things my students learn is Ode to Joy on the piano. Mm-hmm. And it just has this resonance. And, you know, the ending of the lyrics, Ode to Joy, is, you know, world, do you know your creator? Seek him in the heavens, above the stars must he dwell. And so that's where I want to take the listener to a spiritual place, because I'm deeply religious, and I think it's so important that, especially now, people need to just feel joy. They need to feel joy.
I think it sounds like a really exciting piece. I'm curious, once you compose the piece, this will be the world premiere. Do you come away from an actual performance of a piece and ever rethink any part of it?
Absolutely, Paul. And it's funny you mentioned that. It's one reason why I tend to, when I'm performing some of my compositions, I tend to use the music because I keep making changes to it. So I have to keep looking at the score. Oh, I changed that. That's right. So yeah, I can be a little obsessive about that, but I think it's a good thing. You know, self-reflection, you know, even when I give world premieres, I will often think, oh, that, I could change that and try not to distract myself with that.
And I assume some of your compositions have been published.
Well, I self-published them. You can actually get them through my website, which is www.jennifernicolecampbell.com. And I don't have a official publisher yet, but self-publishing gives me a certain amount of freedom, which I like.
At what point in the composing process do you commit to publishing it?
I would say typically maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks out from the performance date. Of course, that depends, but it takes a lot. Editing is a whole nother ball game. Editing is, one of those things that it's just totally different, and it involves getting other people to look at it and printing it out multiple times yourself, and that accent's in the wrong place or whatever, and so that requires sort of a team of people, if you will, and they're mostly colleagues and dear friends that will say, oh, you need to fix that. But yeah.
Well, it's been great hearing a little bit about your process, and believe it or not, we're running out of time. So Amos, let me just give you about a half minute to remind our listeners of the details of the concert.
Well, now that I'm unmuted, we're really looking forward to this performance on November the 18th at 7 p.m. You can get details on our website at www.musicschoolofdelaware.org. And remember that Delaware is spelled out. And you can call the Wilmington branch at 302-762-1132 for more information. We hope to see you there, online or in person.
Great. Amos Fayette and Jennifer Nicole Campbell, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul.